In this week's TPS report, our weekly email, you sent off a link to an article by Gerard, which actually referenced a Fierce Healthcare article about the reader-driven tournament to crown the most overused buzzwords in healthcare today.
Ah, yes.
Maybe we could cover the Elite Eight buzz terms.
So generative AI, as you might imagine, no shocker, may have been the tournament's overall number one seed, potentially. So Elite Eight, they had a matchup against predictive analytics.
Another Elite Eight bracket is value-based care against outcomes-based contracting.
Oh, man. And then breaking down silos versus purpose-driven. That's a good one, too. And then, yeah, finally, patient engagement and GLP-1s. That was your final eight.
But the championship game, Reed, as you can imagine, is generative AI versus breaking down silos.
Yeah.
You know, the irony of it is generative AI, if used appropriately in healthcare, can help break down the silos.
My bracket was busted when Payvider didn't advance past the first round. It really jammed me up.
Welcome to Touchpoint, a podcast dedicated to discussions on digital marketing and patient engagement strategies for hospitals, health systems, and physician practices. In this podcast, we'll dive deep into digital tools, solutions, and strategies that are impacting our industry today. We hope to share a lot of great information with you and have fun along the way. Thanks for joining us. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to Touchpoint. Welcome to episode number 378. I'm Reed Smith. It's almost dark outside, and that is Chris Boyer.
Yeah, you're referring to the total solar eclipse that's happening. So if this podcast is a little bit off, it's probably because the solar eclipse is messing with us.
Yeah, 100%. I don't know what our excuse is for the other episodes, but certainly appreciate everybody's support. Certainly, a quick plug for the website, touchpoint.health, and the TPS report found therein. Sign up for that. We mentioned it in the intro, but there is an email that goes out, 5 articles to get your week started. Hopefully, you find that helpful. We'll pause here, let you go do that. Again, touchpoint.health is the website, and then we'll be back today's show. Chris, in today's digital age, your online reputation, as we all know, is crucial. With customers relying on online reviews, your first impression is also compared directly with your competitors.
Sure is. And Reed, consider this. 86% of patients today read online reviews, and 73% demand that healthcare provider has a minimum 4-star rating.
Demand. They demand it.
Yeah, they do.
Well, to stand out, choose reputation to help amplify your brand and to build trust. Be the provider of choice in your area, understand patient sentiment, get actionable insights, and even foster patient loyalty.
And look, here's the easy way you could do that. All you need to do is go visit reputation.com/touchpoint. That's reputation.com/touchpoint, where you can download their healthcare online reputation management guide and build a reputation that performs for you. Reed, we've had a couple of really solid technology, digital-focused episodes over the past few weeks. Today, we're going to kind of lean a little bit more over on the leadership and, in this case, culture side of the equation. Something that's also very important for people in our roles.
Corporate culture. Do enjoy watching The Office. And I think when I think about corporate culture, that's the first thing that comes to mind for me. But no, it's funny you say that because, you know, my role here at Ardent is somewhat new and maybe a little bit different, at least certainly from what we've done historically. And as I've been down that path in reorging kind of the department and what we do and hiring new people and all that kind of stuff, you know, culture becomes a big piece of that. When I tell like my hiring managers that really I need them to culturally fit within the team. Yes, I do need them to practically be able to do their job, but I am much more concerned about the cultural fit than how good are they, quote unquote, or, you know, how much of a subject matter expert are they?
Yeah. And I think that's kind of astute of you to think that way. Most forward-thinking leaders are realizing that the culture that they're building within their departments, within their organizations, are very, very important. I know that you and I have talked about this fact that healthcare really comes from the side of a purpose-driven mentality. In fact, we did an episode back in November of 2021 about this. We'll link to it in the show notes if you want to go back and listen to it. It's a good episode. But this whole thing is kind of culminating in my mind as well, because I had recently had a conversation with Dan Dunlop. We all know him. He's been on the show before. He actually has been talking a lot about using the language of love in healthcare. This is what he says, and I'm quoting a blog post again in the show notes that he wrote. Currently, marketing and business speak in healthcare is grounded in the language of warfare. We launch campaigns. We target market segments. We engage audiences, and we outflank the competition. We even use guerrilla marketing strategies and tactics. This is something he's been talking about a lot, about what would healthcare be like if we approached our work from a loving and compassionate perspective? And I think that's kind of a bold, interesting way that he talks about the language that we use and the culture that we bring. What are your thoughts on that?
It is interesting, right? Because most things that we do as a department or as a function of the organization is activity-based, you know, and it's a lot of proactive and engagement acquisition type activity. So it lends towards this idea that he's talking about, but that is kind of an interesting concept of thinking about, could we re-term some of this activity? Could we think about it more from a compassionate perspective? That's an interesting thought.
Well, it's not just the language though, too, right? It's actually about creating that culture like you're thinking about. In fact, we have an interview coming up later in today's show from Christy Pretzinger, who is the CEO of WG Content Strategy and Creation. For those of you who may not be familiar with that name, that formerly known as Writer Girl. And she has been talking a lot about this as well. And so it's a really good interview. But before we get to her, let's you and I talk a little bit about what's going on in healthcare and why is this important for us to think about culture so much now? We'll start there with a recent Press Ganey Insight report, Reed.
Yeah, so Employee Experience in Healthcare 2024. So Press Ganey is one of those organizations, obviously, that deals a lot with experience. It could be consumer experience, patient experience, employee experience, et cetera. This in particular, this study, they looked at 2.2 million unique U.S.-based healthcare employees from the past year to better understand, you know, what the workforce looks like. You know, get a temperature check. You know, where are things getting better? Where do challenges still persist, maybe getting worse? Well, how do we think and what does trust and respect and relationships really mean within the workforce? And how do we improve the culture?
Yeah, they found some interesting highlights. Now, we're just going to cover the highlights today. We'll link again to this document, to the PDF, where you can download the entire study and encourage you to do so. The first they found is that engagement is finally trending in the right direction. But they indicate that's not the whole story. So they say for the first time since the start of the pandemic, engagement is on the upswing, jumping from 4.02 out of 5 to 4.04. That doesn't sound like much of an upswing, but it is a movement in a positive direction, right?
Well, it's better than it going the other direction, I guess, right? But I thought what was interesting about that was the roles they say that saw the most improvement were the registered nurses, the RNs. Insecurity, you know, which is kind of an interesting one. As much as we talk about burnout and we talk about the clinicians and things like that, to see the RN number trending more heavily up, and they even say in here, you know, a cause for cautious optimism.
Yeah, because we know that nurses are something that we all talk about. They're the backbone of healthcare. Engagement data consistently highlights the extreme challenges they face. And that fact hasn't changed. In fact, it's potentially getting worse as things progress because of constant demand and radical changes happening to their jobs. But engagement among this group is rising. So it proves that when organizations like health systems focus in on nursing, which we have been doing, and prioritizing strategies to address their needs, you can move the needle. You can actually make positive change in your organization. I think that's an interesting insight.
Absolutely. They're also talking here about that a third of employees still report low engagement with their workplace. So, you know, we still have a lot of work to do, certainly. But this idea that disengaged employees, as they call them, are two times more likely to turn over really helps us try to define where the opportunity still lies. Leaders, they say in here, should be trying to figure out which groups they are. How are they struggling? What are they doing? I would even say just giving the opportunity and spending time in hearing from, not that you have to ping pong ball out of the organization and try to fix everything, but start trying to understand, the way people are feeling, why they're feeling that way, et cetera.
The study also found that the issue with retention is still a crisis. In fact, 1 in 5 healthcare employees who were at the organization in 2022 left in 2023.
Oh, wow.
That's a huge retention issue there. And it jumps to 1 in 4, Reed, if they've only been with the organization 2 years or less.
Almost worse is if they would have stayed, to me, a little bit, right?
Right.
Now, again, you got to understand why they're disengaged or disenfranchised or, kind of depending. You don't want people around that don't want to be there. Like, that's not helpful. But you do need to spend time with folks to understand how to help and how to solve some of the issues that people are having. This is kind of a mixed bag for me a little bit, depending on exactly what the reasoning and kind of thought process is.
Well, here's something to keep in mind. 19% of clinical registered nurses who were at an organization in 2022 left in 2023. And that number rises to 25% for other types of nursing roles, like licensed practical nurses or LPNs, and nursing assistants. So nursing is still, again, while their overall engagement is going higher, there's still a retention issue. One of the reasons they identify in the study is interesting.
Leadership or leader disengagement, which I really hadn't thought much about that. And I guess it depends on how you kind of define a leader. But anyway, it's declined 3 years in a row. So this is one of those few positions they say that's, not rebounded, which is kind of interesting. Think about the frontline staff and things like that. But investing in leaders and leadership is critical to scale an organization. And I don't know what to think about that. That's an interesting stat.
And one that you and I and others listening in could really take heed of. So the last call out is they indicated that millennials need focus. I'm going to stop here to let you insert your joke about millennials.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm not even going to touch that one. I want no part of that.
Well, millennials are over 1/3 of the healthcare workforce, Reed, and they rate their experiences as lower than all other age groups. They rate it at 3.89 out of 5 versus 4.12 among non-millennials. Understanding what those millennial needs are, their preferences, behaviors, and experiences are going to be, as this study points out, paramount to an organization's success. I think for sure, when you think about wanting to retain people long-term in the career of healthcare.
Experience versus expectations there a little bit, right? So it's like, what are they expecting? Again, that's where you've got to go have questions and think through and actually talk to folks to understand why they feel the way they do.
Well, Reed, why don't we take a brief pause here? We'll come back after the break here, and we'll talk a little bit about the concept of quiet quitting, and then get a little bit more optimistic because there's a great article that kind of starts to scratch the surface, which is entitled How to Improve Your Company's Culture in 4 Steps. We'll do that right after this pause.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
All right, so quiet quitting. I think we've mentioned this on a previous episode, but I think this is what we're talking about a little bit, especially with these millennials, right? Somebody that's disengaged, disenfranchised, who just kind of checks out. Like they don't, and that's what I meant a minute ago when I said, it'd been worse if they would have stayed. I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about here is this idea that they still work there, but they don't kind of thing, right?
Right. Well, I think it's quiet quitting. It's just a trite term for employee disengagement. Disengage employees who just quietly quit, right? Mentally check out. And that can negatively impact both people they work with, but also organizations in general. And that leads to decreased job satisfaction, burnout, and even hinders growth in an organization. And this article, The Rise of Quiet Quitting, which actually was posted on LinkedIn by a workforce engagement consultant by the name of Lorna Weston Smith, she outlined some of the root causes of quiet quitting.
Yeah. So the first one that mentions in here is ineffective leadership. So, you know, folks that are failing to provide clear direction or support, you know, and trying to foster that kind of positive culture. They point out some of the obvious things like, hey, you need to be communicating and setting expectations and empowering employees, et cetera. But again, it's easy to say those things. Again, how in a day and age that we're meeting all the time and calendars are slammed full, how do you still proactively and purposely spend time trying to make sure that you are effectively leading your organization?
Another thing is communication. And I know that you and I have talked about, you know, how to build effective strategies. You have to communicate. Well, this employee engagement is a very effective strategy that you have to communicate. Employees need to feel heard, valued, and informed by what you're doing at your organization, the goals, the changes, the decisions. Providing a culture of regular communication is going to be paramount to kind of overturning this concept of quiet quitting. It's not going to be the only reason why, but it's going to be an important part of it.
Psychological safety. So creating a space of that allows everyone's voice to be valued, having that support I mentioned a minute ago, but where people can share experiences and insights, you know, and how do you make it and build a culture where people feel like that they have a voice and it is valued, is important.
And that kind of leads to the last piece, which is lack of trust and respect. You need to build trust, and that requires consistency, fairness, and fostering that inclusive environment where diverse perspectives are valued. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about the negative side of this, Reed. Now our podcast is going to pivot a little bit more positively. Let's end with this article that we found from our friends over at Forbes, how to improve your company's culture in 4 steps. That's all it takes, Reed. 4 steps.
Four. It's four. Just that easy.
Get out your pen and paper. Here we go.
So start off with, to help with engagement and retention rates, to really establish that kind of learning culture, you need to involve the employees in that process. Things of creating lunch and learns or learning opportunities where they can share with each other, they can hear from subject matter experts, et cetera. But again, driving towards that idea of engagement, you do that through engagement, right? So you include folks, you look for ideas, and you create ways that allow people to share and exchange good ideas.
I think that's really important and strongly overlooked. Maybe I'm a little biased because I used to be a teacher, but I think learning is critical. And in my career path, I found that that really helps a lot. Another is address behavior that can clash with the culture. Now, you gave a good example before about working with your recruiter to find someone that fits the culture.
Yep. But
you need to establish employee education programs that outline what constitutes misconduct, what is outside of the company culture, and then demonstrate positive ways about how to recognize and address those behaviors that do not mesh. And in fact, they outline their, this is really funny of this article. It gives 4 factors within one of the 4. So let's talk a little bit about those 4 things, Reed.
Well, timing, act quickly, transparently, find that resolution that makes everybody understand that you're taking things seriously and that you want things to get back quote unquote, business as usual, right? Least disruption as possible.
Right. Maintain objectivity is the second one, right? You got to investigate and be and try to be as objective as possible to preserve the integrity of addressing cultural issues in your organization.
Third, safety. So obviously you should create a safe environment, to have those safeguards that really protect employees, the brand even.
Yeah, exactly. And then lastly, stakeholder impact. You have to ensure your business understands and is prepared to act on the consequences if there is workplace misconduct. Okay, so those are the hidden 4 under step 2 of 4.
Yes.
So now let's go back to the master 4 list, and we're actually at number 3, right, Reed?
Yes. So ask tough questions. So creating and maintaining a positive company culture means, folks should be able to ask tough questions. You should be ready for that as a leader. And so you're looking for those answers that ultimately make a difference in what they do in the culture, et cetera. So again, creating that place where people feel like they can do that is important.
Yeah. And I think that the tough question goes both ways too, right? It's not mm-hmm. just leaders asking, it's being able to allow employees to ask tough questions and being able to respond, again, transparently and openly as possible. Okay, the last thing, remember that culture starts from the top down. And back to your point earlier, Reed, about leadership drives culture, honestly, within an organization. A CEO who works side by side with employees and has an authentic open door policy is laying the foundation for a company culture that is very different from, let's say, the opposite, which is a CEO who defers and delegates and is never available. And I think we all know that. In heart, we can feel that. We know that's there, right? You have to have that top-down culture.
Yeah, you have to. And as a CEO comes in, starts working and doing and setting that vision, it's important that that makes its way through the organization, that leaders are in place that help drive that. From an alignment standpoint, very important. Whether people agree with it or not, it helps really kind of set the tone for the organization of what the expectation is and kind of where things are headed. And that's what really helps to start build that culture.
And so this kind of leads naturally to the interview that I had recently with Christy Pretzinger. As I mentioned, she's the CEO of WG Content Strategy and Creation, formerly known as Writer Girl. And she has been talking a lot about creating the ROI of culture and re-engineering the world of work. She actually has a platform on which she speaks about this. And she and I were able to sit down and talk about creating this culture based on kindness and personal development. And at what she has done personally, but also how she has worked with other leaders in other organizations to kind of mirror this behavior. And it was a really fascinating interview. So after the pause, you're going to hear my conversation with Christy about this. And then, Reed, after that interview, you and I will be back to close out the show.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Ask the Expert segment of the podcast. And today I am delighted to have on for the first time, but hopefully not the last, a good friend, colleague, and someone that many of us in the industry know. That's Christy Pretzinger from Writer Girl. Christy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Chris. I've wanted to do this for a while. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I'm excited to have you on today, and I'm really excited about the topic that we're going to jump into. But prior to that, some people listening in may not know you, which is a shame. I'd love for you to take a moment to share a little bit about your background, where you came from, what your current role is, and then ultimately we'll use that as a way to kind of segue into the conversation today.
Well, first of all, I am, as you mentioned, the CEO and owner of Writer Girl, which, by the way, we have a little bit of news that just we announced last week. Writer Girl is now WG Content. I'll talk about that a little bit more later, but you can still find us at writergirl.com. It will all point to the new website. But I started my career, gosh, a long time ago, but I started freelancing as a freelance writer just a little over 30 years ago. So I'm virtually unemployable now. And then I started building Writer Girl in about 2004, so 20 years ago now. And I didn't know what I was doing. I was a French major in college. I had no intention of building a multi-million dollar business. I didn't even know how. I just was working. But I did say to my accountant at the time that if I couldn't build a business based on kindness, then I would go back to being a freelancer. So I always had that intention. But, you know, as anybody who's ever had a job knows, you know, you kind of have intentions and then you just get busy doing the work, right? So I got busy doing the work, wearing every hat, building the business. And fast forward to about 4 or 5 years ago, we were working with some consultants about, you know, kind of structuring our business, like our org chart kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we were working with these consultants, and the first thing they did was interview all of the employees to find out what was our core, the thing without which we would not exist. And it came back that it was our culture. And I found that really interesting. I thought, huh, that's interesting. I wasn't surprised, but I thought, you know, you wouldn't think of culture as necessarily contributing to profit or revenue generating, right? You wouldn't think of it that way. What happened is that I was actually having dinner with some other business owner friends of mine, and we were talking about, you know, business as you do. And several of them have had successful exits from business, meaning they've sold their businesses and exited out. So we were kind of talking about that, and they talk a lot about, you know, the bottom line and EBITDA and all these different kinds of things. And I said, you know, obviously I look at all of that, but what I really do is I look at my business through the lens of a cultural balance sheet. And it was almost like this little epiphany, like, oh, that's a book. And so I'm actually working on that. It should be coming out this summer. The book is called Your Cultural Balance Sheet, Strategies for Creating an Environment Where People Can Thrive.
And this is what we're going to talk about, because I think this is something that is top of mind to many of the leaders out there listening in today. Let's face it, what's happening in our society, and not just our industry, but our society in large, is there's been a great shift or change in how the employee workforce is, and engagement and employee engagement, employee recruitment, employee retention is top of mind to many people listening in.
I think that the world writ large is in kind of a turmoil, and not just in this country, around the world. You know, there's a lot of unrest and uncertainty and all sorts of things going on. And, you know, as a leader, what I tend to do in my organization, and I know you've done this as well, Chris, is I tend to look at things from like a long perspective, right? A long view, kind of looking out and looking at the landscape all around, right? And so what I've observed is that I feel like the world, but certainly our country, and I would believe this industry as well, is really yearning for human connection, real human connection. I think that's so important, and it can't be underestimated. And I also think that we are in need of what I would call like feminine energy. And I'm not talking gender, I'm talking energy. I think we need both male and female energy, absolutely. But in the workplace, and when I speak of that, what I'm talking about are more the soft skills, things like empathy, vulnerability, kindness, openness, all of those things that enable real, genuine human connection. I think we're yearning for that. And I think that that's obviously a major part of building an effective environment where people can thrive.
You know, I was talking with another colleague of ours, Dan Dunlop. I think many of us know who he is. Yes. And he was saying that he finds that people in leadership roles, they tend to double down on this language around, like, almost like a warlike language, right? They talk about war rooms and strategies and you know, how do we, et cetera. And what you're alluding to is more of the softer skills, which I think kind of speaks to this concept of culture, which I think is at the root of all of this. And, you know, one of the things that attracted me to this industry, to the healthcare industry, was the fact that there's a higher purpose, right? There is a reason why many of us work in this space. We're trying to enable good in the world. Mm-hmm. Yet what I've also found in my many years working inside and also outside as a consultant for health systems is that the culture sometimes doesn't reflect that. This really gets into this concept of cultural balance sheet. Help me understand what this concept is.
You know, if you think about a financial balance sheet, you know, certainly anyone who owns a business, but anyone who has financial responsibility has to look at a balance sheet at some point. If you have budgetary responsibility, you may only look at part of it, but you still see a balance sheet of some sort. But what's interesting is that on a financial balance sheet, there is no line item for humans. None. It doesn't show up. So what happens, and if there is anything, it's a liability because they look at, meaning this financial world, employees are looked at as a cost as opposed to a real benefit, which is, of course, very short-sighted and, in my mind, incorrect. Because the largest asset any organization has is its people. So I started thinking about this and thought, okay, well, first of all, another thing that's a hidden cost on a balance sheet is employee turnover. I always say that when somebody leaves, it's like watching an entire library, an encyclopedia, walk out your door, you know, and on top of the institutional knowledge that they take with them. There's also another thing I say is that positions are always replaceable, but people are not. And people, each person brings a special magic to the team that they're a part of. And if they leave, that special magic is gone and it changes everything. And there's a cost associated with that. So what I did is I started looking at your cultural balance sheet, and I actually created a signature talk on your cultural balance sheet as well, talking about looking at it from assets, liabilities, and then equity. And so your assets, and I go through what those are, obviously starting with your people. I also talk about your values. In our case, our values are we are empowered, curious, kind, and fun. And one of the important things about your values is that they should remain constant. They don't change. The expression of those values may change, but not the values, because the people who are on your team need to have some constancy. And then those values are a thread that flows through your entire organization. Every decision can hang on that thread. And that helps build the culture. So there's a lot more assets, obviously, that I go into. And then the same thing with liabilities. We talk about I talk about the different liabilities, one of which actually is, you know, talking about the importance of your values being constant. The flip side of that is if you are too rigid, you know, if you're like, this is what we've always done, and we're not going to change, that can be a real problem as well. Another problem is you can not set boundaries. You know, it's really important, certainly in our industry or in our position, we're a service provider to hospitals and the healthcare ecosphere. And it's very important for us to make sure right from the beginning to say, here's how we'd like to work with you, you know, and we want to agree that these are the boundaries that we're both going to have. Because especially as a service provider, if you don't have boundaries, then that can lead to resentment. Right? You see somebody being like, oh, sure, that's fine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. I'll get that to you. And they really don't want to do that. And it's not reasonable. And then they're resentful. And then people become passive aggressive. That's what I just said, the kind of, yeah, mm-hmm, sure, I'll do it. It's fine. I'm fine. And obviously they're not fine. And then what happens with that is it can lead to burnout. And then burnout can in turn lead to employee turnover. So it's a thread, again, that flows through. There's a lot more liabilities. But the interesting thing about cultural liabilities, Chris, is that if you focus on them, they can become assets because you can intentionally correct them. And then what happens is the equity, which is, you know, the third piece of a balance sheet, the equity becomes the culture that results from the intention and attention on your assets and liabilities. So that's kind of a simplified perspective of it.
I think it's a really interesting perspective. Two things. The first, it reminds me of, I used to work for someone that said, well, what if we invest all this time and resources into growing our workforce and they leave? And I said, well, what if we don't and they stay?
Yeah.
To me, that's the whole point here, right? Is that we want to yes. make sure that we're leveraging and bringing the humanness of each individual and the uniqueness of every individual into our workspace. You know, I love the way you kind of position that. As more and more of, you know, people that work in my role, healthcare marketing, we're working very closely now with HR. HR kind of sees this within an organization, but marketing also sees the assets of every employee as being valuable to the overall brand. Love to hear your perspective on that.
If your brand as a health system most likely includes something about caring, there's one of our clients, and actually a hospital here in our region, one of their branding promises a couple years ago was we're right here. So it was all like, we're right, you know, it's the people aspect of it. So if you have that as your outward facing brand, and meanwhile, inside your organization, you have chaos, you know, a lack of clarity. Like I always say, clarity is kindness. You have to have clarity around what you're trying to do, both individually and together as a team. And you have to actually care. If you're in the caring profession, how can you not care about the people that are inside providing those services, whether it's marketing, finance, or, you know, nurses and physicians? It's incongruous, and it's actually it's hypocritical if you don't actually have that. Now, I've spoken to many people, obviously, in this industry, and I've heard, sadly, in several instances, that while the organization knows this is an issue, they still focus on that financial balance sheet and the bottom line. And we all know that. I mean, of course it's important. I'm not in any way diminishing the importance of a financial balance sheet. But there are lots and lots of stories I could share if we had all day long about organizations that prioritize, for example, shareholder value, let's say, or just, you know, the bottom line profits over the employees. And it doesn't bode well. There are lots of horror stories about that.
It really doesn't bode well because there is a lot of value to kind of doubling down on the culture, right? What I'm trying to remember that quote. Was it Peter Drucker who said the culture eats strategy for breakfast?
Yes.
Isn't that right? And when I think about that, right, that really, what that to me speaks about the fact that regardless of where you're going as an organization, if you're not really taking a moment to, as I'll borrow your term here, to add a cultural balance sheet to your overall, strategy and understanding and kind of aligning your business towards that, then you potentially will never make your strategic goals.
I agree. You know, when I last had a job a long time ago, I had a small team of, I think, 3 or 4 people. And I remember at the time saying that I had a team of happy, productive employees and nobody cared. You know, that was not the thing that mattered to them. And that was partially one of the reasons I left and also was a driver for building a business based on kindness. Because, you know, I've said many times, I've building this business, I'm not someone who does things for money, but I have seen in my own life that when you follow something that you love and you're passionate about, then the money comes. And that's very much what has happened here with this organization. And I really do look at, again, as the leader of the organization, I'm not in the day-to-day. Many people listening know Colleen Massa. She's amazing. And she is our COO. She's remarkable. She's not too much in the weeds either, but she's much more involved in the day-to-day. But when she brings things to me, because she's the only direct report I have, because I'm a terrible boss, because I'm horrible at holding people up. When we talk about things, one of the things I'm always saying is like, okay, wait a minute, how is this affecting the way people feel about their jobs? This change that we've made, do they have less joy in their jobs? Are they feeling terribly stressed? What I tell people is that building this culture takes time. It goes much more slowly than the strategy war room thing. Because if you're a general, you just tell people what to do and you really don't care what they think about it. They obey orders. If you are building a culture based on kindness and trust and empathy and all of those things, then you have to do it more slowly. You might as a leader know the answer to the question, but if you just answer the question, nobody gets an opportunity to grow. They don't get an opportunity to share ideas. And you as a leader don't get to hear things that you didn't know they knew or ideas they had. But that takes time, doesn't it?
I think this is really fundamentally important for every aspect of what you do. You know, when you think about the things that we talk about as most important to our organization right now, in my role, it's about building digital experiences, right? Making sure the experiences of patients and even employees are worthwhile and using digital for that overall common good to make it easier, to make it more productive for everybody, to allow people to access care. You hear marketing leaders talk about, you know, that they're now partnering with HR on helping with recruitment and retention strategies. I think the underpinning of all this, and even like when we think about like adopting new tools like AI or whatever, mm-hmm. all of these things fall back into culture. Weathering the changes of new technology, new challenges facing our workforce, new approaches to engaging employees, it all is based on this kind of foundation of culture. And I think that this is very, very critical for organizations.
I totally agree. My gosh, it's like, especially if you talk about AI, right? By the time we're done with this conversation, it'll be completely different than it was when we started. But, you know, for example, with obviously business, we live in a technological world. There's no escaping it. My company is no different. And so we recently, actually past a year and a half, we've had a very big undertaking where we've made a lot of technological changes. We've, you know, minimized our tech stack and done a lot of work around that, which means the tasks people perform remain the same as sort of ish, but the way they do them has changed. And so it was challenging. Think about, you know, hospital systems implementing Epic, right? And I mean, there will be tears, right? When things like that happen.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the things we did is we knew it was going to be challenging. We planned it to be slow, sort of like when you, renovate a house, it's going to cost twice as much and take twice as long. Mm-hmm. So kind of the same school of thought around this. And then what we also did is in our organization, we use the Enneagram as a personality typing. There's a million, you know, tools out there, but this one I particularly like because it looks at the motivation for your behavior as opposed to just your behavior. And it's actually a very deeper, it's a deeper dive into really into self-awareness and also empathy. So it's a wonderful tool, I think. So what we did is after we had been doing this for about, I think it was about 6 months, we did a day-long Enneagram workshop around change management. And so everybody came together in person. We're normally virtual, but we had everybody come in person into town. We had a full-day workshop, and we talked about change from your personality type perspective. What's interesting is that while we have great diversity in personality types, what happens is that people's behavior may look similar, but why they behave that way is very different. So we addressed all of that. People were able, what happens is when you learn about your own type and then you also learn about other people's types, it actually sets you up to be radically empathetic because you're thinking about, oh, that person is behaving this way because of XYZ, because you have a fuller understanding of that typing. But it takes time to do that, right? And it was a full-day workshop. It was expensive. It took time. But it was also at the end of, it was in December. And then we give everyone the last 2 weeks of the month off, which is a big hit to our financial balance sheet, by the way. But there is absolutely no way to show the benefit that we get on a financial balance sheet, but on a cultural balance sheet, it's right there. People come back the first of the year, they're enthusiastic, they're refreshed, they've had a lovely time off with their family. And so we did this workshop right before that. There was a lot of emotion around change, as you can imagine, most people don't like it. So there was a lot of emotion about it. And then we had our big holiday party, and then everybody went away for 2 weeks and came back and felt refreshed, ready to go, and really understood. I think everybody felt like their experience actually mattered around this big change, because it actually does matter.
I think you hit on something that's really important. Investing in the cultural balance sheet as opposed to the financial balance sheet is a long-term strategy. It's not something that you're going to see ROI in 90 days.
Absolutely. In fact, what I always say is, you know, one of the foundational elements of an effective culture is trust. Trust in your leaders, trust in each other. And trust is a long game. In fact, people listening here will know Kirsten Lecky. She is our EVP of business development. She's amazing. And Reba and Colleen recruited Kirsten. When Kirsten first came, she didn't believe that this organization was the way that we were presenting it. She thought it was too good to be true. Understandably, she was right to be skeptical because it sounded so Pollyanna-ish. But now she's been here. She just celebrated 9 years. And, you know, she's definitely one of my ride or dies, and she loves Ride or Girl and doesn't plan on going anywhere. But it was a long game, you know, to have her believe that I meant what I said and I say what I mean. And I actually put wings to my words. And I'm not kidding when I say that we have life-work balance, not work-life balance. That's very intentional that we say it that way. But you're right. It's a long game. It doesn't happen quickly. The sad thing is, though, you can blow it fast.
That's the weird part about this, is that it takes a long time to build trust, but seconds to ruin it, right?
Exactly.
And that's the challenge with culture. And you know, when I think about now, let's put ourselves in the minds of the healthcare marketing leaders that are now partnering with HR, that are really kind of focusing in on ways that they could leverage their capabilities to help improve employee culture, to help improve retention, recruitment activities, those sorts of things. What are some tips you can provide them to get them started down this path?
Well, you know, Chris, one of the things that I had a coach tell me a long time ago, and this applies no matter whether you're a business owner, whether you're a CMO, a marketing director, marketing manager, or just a parent, right? It's like, it's about you are leading in some capacity in your life. Whatever it is that you're leading won't grow until you do. In my experience, that has proven to be true. It's about self-awareness, peeling back the layers to yourself and looking inside there and seeing what your strengths and also what your weaknesses are, frankly, looking at those and understanding how, especially as a leader, most importantly, is where do you need to moderate your behavior to be a more effective leader? I know that in my case, I can be very directive and it can shut my team down. And I have learned over the years, I really, really have to watch that because the last thing I want to do is shut my team down. So I have to be careful about that. And I'm a grown up. I can moderate my behavior, but I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't done the work on myself to understand that aspect of my personality and to see that sometimes it's good, but sometimes it can be a real liability, and I can moderate that. So I would say that one of the first things as a leader to do is to be curious about yourself. You know, learn a little bit about yourself, dig into that. When I was told that, this was probably, back in 2009, a long time ago, it was the first time that our business went over $1 million in revenue. And it was because I spent every morning, I got up and I meditated. And then I read different kinds of really more personal development books as opposed to business development. Now, we've all read those too, but I've spent a lot more time, I would say, studying my own personal development. And it's had a tremendous impact, both obviously on my life, but in the business as well.
Yeah, it's almost like you have to really double down on understanding you as a leader and where your strengths and weaknesses are in order to help highlight your employees or the people that report to you's strengths and weaknesses as well. It's like modeling the culture that you want.
And you have to lead by example. You know, if you want an organization, your team, to excel in the soft skills, if you want them. Now, when I talk about this, I'm always cautious to say, you know, just like we say when we work with organizations, we don't know the sandbox in which you play, but we jump in there with you and help you solve your problems. And I say the same thing with this. Some organizations, let's say if you're speaking about a marketing director, it is not safe for them to be vulnerable up the chain. And that's fine. That's understandable. And that's something they'll have to discern. However, it is interesting and perhaps wise for them to cultivate vulnerability within their own team and make that a safe space for that team. That doesn't mean you can do it throughout the organization, but you can control that in your team. If you foster vulnerability, like if you and I are talking, Chris, and you share something vulnerable about yourself, as a human, I can't help but like you a little bit more. And then I'm going to, in turn, share something somewhat vulnerable about myself. Now, you know, you don't have to get terribly vulnerable, but there's a level of that there. And it helps you forge, like we were talking earlier about that true human connection. And then you want to work harder together. You help each other. You are in lockstep on things, and you protect that culture, which in turn strengthens the organization.
Well, I know, Christy, I could talk to you about this forever because it's really fascinating to me and appeals to me. I have held leadership roles. I'm a change agent. All of these things kind of intersect with the work that I do. My hard skills and my soft skills together, I think, make it so that it's so much powerful, so much more powerful as an effective leader. But, you know, as we're coming to the end of this conversation, I'm sure you're going to be talking about this much more as we move forward. What are some things that people listening in can do to find out more about this concept of the cultural balance sheet and learn a little bit more about some of the things that you have planned?
Well, you can always follow me on LinkedIn, just Christy Pretzinger on LinkedIn. You can also go to our website, which is now wgcontent.com. But you can also go to writergirl.com and it will point you to WG Content. So you can always find us there. And also when you go to WG Content, you'll see a new founders video that I did explaining the evolution of our organization. And I talk a little bit about the foundation of our culture in all of this, because it really is the most important thing to me as a leader. And then also, I am the author of the upcoming book, Your Cultural Balance Sheet, Strategies for Creating an Environment Where People Can Thrive, that we are hoping will be out sometime this summer.
And you also are going to be at the Healthcare Marketing Physician Strategy Summit.
Yes, we will be there. And we would love for people to stop by, see our new booth, and have a glass of champagne, come celebrate with us. But we would love to see you. It's going to be fun. I'm actually going to be there. I don't go to as many conferences as Colleen and Kirsten and Reba. I know almost everybody knows them, but I'm happy to be there too for this big announcement. And then our marketing director, who's been responsible for this huge undertaking, Heather Stanley, she'll be there as well. So we're really looking forward to it. It's going to be a big celebration, and we would love to have you stop by and say hi.
Well, absolutely. I'm going to definitely be sure to stop by and say hello and carry on the conversation. And we'll put links to your LinkedIn as well as your new website in the show notes so people listening in can follow along and learn a little bit more and connect with you. So, Christy, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciated what we talked about today. And I really want to thank you for your insights, your perspectives on this important topic.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Chris. I always like talking to you. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't wait to read your book. So
thank you. And we'll see you at HMPS.
Special thanks to Christy for coming on the show. Certainly appreciate her thoughts and time. And again, this is very timely for me as I kind of just continue to think about the evolution of the department, of the function, and how do you continue to think about culture? I mean, it's just as important, if not more important, than any other project that I oversee or I'm in charge of. So it's super, super great to hear from other folks.
Absolutely. It was a great interview. And if you're at HMPS next week, the Healthcare Marketing Physician Strategy Summit, Christy will be there. So be sure to stop by her booth and say hello and tell her you heard this interview.
Yeah, that's right. If you have a chance, if you are in Vegas next week, certainly reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you. Stop by and check them out as well. A couple of recommendations and we'll call today. What do you got today?
Reed, I'm going to recommend something that maybe those of you who are watching the total solar eclipse were taking some photos, or if you just share photos with your family and other loved ones, something that I do a lot since I have a little boy in our house and we just recently did a family vacation. One thing, I'm on an Apple phone, an iPhone, and so I created a shared album to share with my friends and family that are on iPhones. Great, right? I mean, have you done that before, Reed?
I don't think I have.
Well, it's really easy to do. All you have to do is create an album. If you go into your picture app and you can create a shared album, and there you can upload photos from your own album to that shared album and then invite people that are on iPhones to view. And you can also allow them to upload photos, and suddenly you could create like shared photo albums among multiple different people.
Oh, nice.
So that's half of my recommendation, because I just uploaded about 20 or so photos from a weekend vacation that I took with my son, Colorado. And so my Minnesota family could see what was happening. It was really great. A great way to share photos among others. But my sister is one of those pesky green text persons who's on an Android device.
Oh, boy.
And I was like, well, how am I going to share this with you? Well, guess what? There is a way. Within the iCloud photo albums, there is a way where you can actually create it by taking your shared album and making it a public website that's a private link, but you can create a link that then you can share with Android people. Now, unfortunately, your Android people can't upload photos to the site, but they can be at least viewers of your shared album. So one way that Apple is trying to bridge the gap between their iPhone devices and the Android devices out there is using shared photo albums. And that's going to be my recommendation this week.
Very cool.
Create some shared albums.
Nice. I like that. I have to check that out. My recommendation, a product, a suitcase, matter of fact, a carry-on roller bag. I like bags. I like briefcases, all that kind of stuff. And so I'm always looking for something a little bit different. And I ordered a new roller bag for a particular purpose. So it's kind of your standard 20-inch carry-on, that would go in an overhead compartment, TSA compliant, whatever. But from a company called Level 8, like L-E-V-E-L and the number 8, Level 8. And so it's kind of one of those hard shell roller bags, the 360 kind of swivels. It's got the handle that telescopes out and that kind of thing. But the particular one I got is the Roadrunner Pro Carry. And so kind of the front face of this bag pops open and there's a place to like slide your laptop and stuff in that's not physically inside your bag, like where you would have to unzip it. And so I'm going to see if of these next couple of trips, if I can eliminate a bag, like if I can just have one bag I take, without a backpack or without a briefcase or messenger bag or something like that. So excited to try it out and see how it works. I've gotten to where I kind of carry my iPad around. I don't really need a full bag for that.
Cool.
So this will give me some place to put an iPad, a charger, charging block, things like that. And again, just have the kind of one single bag. And quite honestly, I'm doing this so I have more leg room and I'll have a bag underneath the seat in front of me. So
what a cool idea. That's really great. I've been kind of looking for something like that because I travel with my iPad a lot as well.
Yeah, so we'll see how it goes. Anyway, Level 8, they got some good looking stuff though. Some bags and luggage, some accessories, things like that. Kind of a neat company. So, I mean, they've got some backpacks. They've got actually some coolers, which is kind of interesting. And then they've got things like organizers for like inside of your suitcase or toiletry kits, things like that. But anyway, you can check out the carry-ons, and it's kind of in that section. So
very cool.
All right. Well, another good episode, another great topic. Look forward to seeing everybody in Las Vegas. If you're going to be there, reach out, let us know. Love to connect. It's going to be a good conference. Just come track us down. We'll be around, pretty accessible. So, Chris Boyer, I'm Reed Smith, and we'll see you next week.
This has been a Touchpoint Media production. To learn more about this show and others like it, please visit us online at touchpoint.health.